symptoms and tissue samples confirm subject is infected. Vaccine test. GA series serum 391, compound 6. Commencing human trials. Respiration slowing. Pulse 190. Core temperature 105. 104 and decreasing. We may have something here.
Hi there, and thanks for tuning in to The Infected, your podcast from the heart of darkness. We have a very special, extra lengthy podcast for you tonight, because we're closing shop after 3 seasons and 36 episodes. Yes, yes. Jeroen and I started this podcast, and also with Jan Willem, by the way, in the first season, while we were in lockdown. Now that the world is opening up again, and the infection is under control, for the most part, we're moving on to do other things. But for now, we're going to have fun, and we really enjoyed doing this. The episodes will all stay online. They can easily be found on our website at theinfected.nl. On our website, you can also find all of the interviews we did with artists, all of our show notes, all the bonus content. So right now, sit back, relax, turn up the volume, and don't forget to stick around until the very end, my friends. Because we're also going to announce the winner of our 8-bit minute competition and much more to come. So here we go. The first track we're going to play today is Saudade by Love and Rockets.
Thank you.
So that was Saudade from the first album of Love and Rockets, and that album is called Seventh Dream of Teenage Heaven. It's from 1985. If you listen to this track, that's really stuff dreams are made of. Right, my friend?
Definitely, yeah. A really relaxed, laid back and beautiful track. It's not what I associate Love and Rockets with. I thought it was more upbeat and dancey and poppy and stuff, but this is beautiful, man.
Well, you're absolutely right, because they are, overall. This is one that I picked out from their first album. It's, I believe, the only or one of two ballads or instrumental tracks.
Uh-huh.
But you're right, they are more poppy and more mainstream, but this is... I'm feeling a bit melancholic today, since it's the last episode, so this is the perfect one to start off with. In fact, saudade is a Portuguese word that describes the nostalgic feeling of missing something or someone that once was but isn't anymore. So, very fitting.
Yeah.
A bit of background about Love and Rockets. They were an English alternative rock band formed in 1985 by former Bauhaus members. I didn't know that.
Oh.
Daniel Ash and David and also Kevin Haskins, their brothers, after Bauhaus split up in 1983. And with Love and Rockets, they moved away from the more serious goth sound from Bauhaus and they added more poppy elements, as you just mentioned, Jeroen. Also, some overly complicated and very pretentious lyrics. I'm not a big fan of the rest that they did, to be honest, but this track is really beautiful. They also were accused of being sellouts by former Bauhaus fans, and I can imagine there's a big discrepancy there. So I think people have to get used to, had to get used to the new sound. And Love and Rockets, they released their first album in 85, like I just mentioned. It received mixed reviews. However, in the late 80s, the group had a devoted following, resulting in a surprise top 10 hit single, So Alive, in 1989.
Mm-hmm.
And during the early 90s, the group audience, well, it declined, but they still had a number of loyal fans in the end. And the band members were also working on some solo projects, but they reformed in 1992 to make a new album together. They added some dance and electronica elements to their sound, but they were afraid the world would not be ready for it. So they waited until 1994 to release it. But in the meantime, a fire destroyed the studio they were working in, and all material was scrapped in the end.
Wow.
So that's kind of an ominous end to this band. I believe from then on, they mainly went their own ways and continued on with solo projects. That's the last thing I found out about Love and Rockets.
Hi, you're listening to The Infected.
You're listening to The Infected. You're listening to The Infected.
You're listening to The Infected.
You're listening to The Infected.
You're listening to The Infected.
And you are listening to The Infected.
So after Love and Rockets, what else do we have in store today?
Yeah, we have some Scottish filth. How about that?
Ooh.
Yeah, so...
Sounds good already.
Yeah, always good, right?
Yeah.
What we're going to be playing next is a track by Arabs Trap. And the track is called The Turning of Our Bones. Now, this is a Scottish duo, Aidan Moffat and Malcolm Middleton. They both grew up in Falkirk, Scotland. The debut album was released in 96, and at this point, Gary Miller and David Gow also joined the band and became the rhythm section, creating a more dynamic live experience when the band started touring. Arab Strap's marked characteristics include sexual, personal, very honest lyrics. So their lyrics are sung in their native Scottish tongue, not to be mistaken, for anything else. At first, essentially an electroacoustic band with a brooding, spare sound, later albums and gigs saw them develop a fuller sound that draws deeply on both indie and darker music. And their lyrics always continuing to focus on sex, drink and drugs. So on 9 September 2006, the band announced on their website that they were to split up. They went on tour in Europe for the last time at the end of 2006, and then they were gone. Until in 2013, Middleton said he didn't think Arab Strap would ever record new music again because we could only write songs of that ilk at a certain age.
Perfect.
And yet Arab Strap performed live a few times after the split in 2011 for a one-off gig and then again in 2016 for a run of festival dates. And in 2017, Moffat again told a fan after the show that the performance was likely to have been their last ever gig.
Hmm.
However, this track, The Turning of Their Bones, is from the year 2020. And so it was their first new song in 15 years. Arab Strap said they were back from the grave and ready to rave. The Turning of Our Bones is an incantation. It's a voodoo spell to raise the dead, inspired by the Famadihana ritual of the Malagzi people of Madagascar. This is a ritual in which they dance with the corpses of loved ones.
Okay.
Yeah, okay, indeed.
I'm seeing a picture in front of me right now, what that would look like. But
No, it's interesting to say the least. So these highland people of Madagascar, they bury their dead not once, but twice. First, they use individual graves for the corpses, and then, 2 years later at least, they dig up their dead, and they dance with them held high over their heads. This is Famidana.
Yeah.
Then after the party is over, they rebury them, and this time in a family tomb. As Moffat said of this new song in a statement, it's really all about resurrection and shagging. I proudly present to you The Turning of Our Bones by Arab Strap.
Love this.
I saw you in a mask with a secret someone. I saw is willing, but the spirit is weak. The second life is calling, feel its pull, feel its toll. So let's live now before we're back below.
Was a very nice track,
don't you think? Yeah.
And I must say, the people in Madagascar must be quite smart, because if you dig up a body after 2 years, it's much lighter to lift above your head. And like these guys just mentioned in the lyrics, the maggots would have probably eaten half or almost all of you. So that must be a skeleton then. Yeah, nice track.
Yeah.
Very recognizable Scotch accent, Scottish accent. Yeah.
So I think it's somehow very human to want to dance one more time with your loved ones, yeah? Somehow. I could relate to this. And it's a weird ritual, but at the same time, I somehow, at a certain level, I understand.
Yeah, I understand. But I would at the same time like to think of the people I leave behind just the way they were, and not physically see their dead bodies in front of me. But that's just a matter of taste, maybe. I don't know. But yeah. I get the sentiment, of course, yes.
In some way, I understand it. And yet, if you would invite me to this ceremony, I'd gracefully make an excuse to not have to be there.
Yeah, I respectfully decline, but have a ball.
But it's a beautiful song, beautifully constructed, very subtle, actually, especially for the theme that it covers.
Yeah.
And yeah, very, very recognizable, sort of thick Scottish accent, which clearly describes in glorious detail what it would be like. So, yeah.
Yep. I also like that beat that was going on in the background, kind of like a heartbeat, rhythm beat. Like a 909 beat. It's an interesting track, but how did you come across this then?
A tip from one of our lovely listeners, again.
Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
When I heard this track, I thought, wow, that's really worthwhile, and it you know, fits right into our set of themes.
Sure does. And it's also reminding me a bit of O Children, where he mixes in multiple styles of vocals and beats, but also like analog gear, and it's a mixed bag, but perfectly fits the scene. Hey, listen, man, I can take you all to a next track, and I'm talking about a band called Div Juz. They were on the 4AD record label, a very famous label. Not the biggest band on that label, but let's just listen to the track right now. It's called No Motion. I believe it's from 1987 or something like that. And then we can discuss it afterwards. Sound good? So let's keep the pace and start in this next track. Here we go.
Thank you.
Wow, that's a really cool track.
Glad you like it, man.
Almost sounds jazzy to me. Do you understand what I mean? It's the
yeah, the playfulness and the switches.
Chord progressions.
Is that what you mean?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Also improvisation. And I'm not sure. It's, yeah, the atmosphere is introspective and yet it sort of explore the soundscape in a way which keeps you focused and keeps your attention there. I don't drift off or anything, right? You just follow and float along.
No, I agree. It's definitely like a free-flowing stuff right here. And that's all that they do or have done, because every track that you listen to, it's all kind of this style, but very different. There's not one boring track that they've ever put out, I think. And the thing is that Div Juz, they developed out of a punk band. That's something that you would not immediately expect after listening to this track.
And not immediately, no.
No, right? So that punk band was called London Pride. I've never heard of that. You?
No.
No, me neither, man. So that was founded, and also Div Juz was founded by the brothers Alan and Dave Curtis in late 1979, the year I was born, by the way. Anyway, Alan, he was involved with the new wave band Duran Duran at the time.
Mm.
Oh, yes. Alan soon disappeared and missed a particularly wild gig after the band hired the owners of the Birmingham Rum Runner nightclub as managers. So Div Juz thought it was a great idea to hire some nightclub managers as a manager. Anyway, in a 2003 interview, John Taylor of Duran Duran and also Alan said that straight away they kind of skipped town because they thought they would be getting involved with two nightclub owners meant they would end up chopped up into pieces down a city alleyway or some stuff like that.
Okay, they weren't the best kind of nightclubs, I guess.
No, definitely doesn't sound like a right choice anyway. So Div Juz, like I mentioned before we played this track, they may not have been the most successful or well-known band on the 4AD label, but their music sure typifies their, ethereal and moody approach, the 4AD sound, if you will. And they were an all-instrumental quartet that made very mesmerizing and evolving compositions, like we just mentioned. You have that jazz reference that I totally get. In fact, you can state that they invented the post-rock genre that would only emerge 15 years later and after the group have disbanded. Long tracks, mostly instrumental, they kind of laid the fundaments, maybe. And they recorded some EPs during their existence, Div Juz. They also did one full-length album in 85 called Extractions. It's on Spotify, by the way.
Wow.
And the album was produced by Robin Guthrie at that time. Also featured guest vocals by fellow Cocteau Twin Liz Fraser here and there. So it's not
there we go again. It's one of your Cocteau Twin link
had to
things.
Do it. Sorry. Yeah. Had to do it.
And you picked a song without Liz on it.
Yep. Just for you, my friend. Just for you.
No, at the beginning, I didn't like Cocteau Twins at all. And one of the things this show has brought me is a new appreciation for Liz and for the Cocteau Twins. Having listened to this show multiple times, old episodes, and having mixed some Cocteau Twins stuff into a set recently, I've grown a liking for Liz and the guys. So,
some light in the end of the tunnel.
It's grown on me.
Perfect, man.
I have to admit. But yet you did not pick a track with Liz on it this time.
Nope. I did not. I've just picked another one, by the way. The first one I played, and now this one's kind of all slow, introspective, emotional stuff, but I like it. And also Liz, she sings here and there, but it's just maybe two or three tracks that I've heard of by Div Juz that she actually sings on.
Yeah, she's not a permanent fixture or anything.
No. Just here and there. And it's also believed that the name Div Juz was adopted as a play on different jazz.
Ah, there's the jazz.
You must be onto something, Jeroen. But according to Alan, it was just a spur-of-the-moment utterance that didn't mean anything. But different jazz, Div Juz, kind of makes sense. Who knows?
Oh, it's just Div Juz.
Yeah. Yes, sir.
Oh, very British.
Indeed.
These guys invented the post-rock genre 15 years before it broke through as a genre, is what you said. I was just thinking about that. I mean, would they be thinking, shit, we were 15 years early? Or, wow, we got it a 1.5 decade before everyone else. I'm proud of it. Or, maybe also sad for not being understood until 15 years later.
Could be. How would you feel?
I'm not sure. If this was my record, I'd definitely be proud of it. So, yeah.
It also makes me think about the Pixies that invented grunge before, the Seattle other guys stole the show with it and made a lot of money with it. But yeah, I don't know, man. Yeah, but it sounds like post-rock, like this evolving sounds, just mainly instrumental. Yeah.
Yeah.
You could state that they invented it, but it's maybe a stretch. I don't know.
It's also something you need to be a bit more grown up or adult for to appreciate. And it's like, this is going nowhere and it's all over the place. And, you know, get some focus and where's the beef, you know?
Yeah.
But now I appreciate it. Yeah,
I agree. Yeah, I don't have that much patience for post-rock, but it just depends on the mood, right?
Right.
A bit.
Yeah.
And age.
Infected Classic.
We couldn't really finish this show without playing this staple of a track. There's a good story to this one, Astrid. I'm talking about Blue Monday by New Order. Hmm. I don't think there's many people out there that never heard this one.
No, true.
Even my 70-year-old son loves it and has it in many of his playlists. It's a very, very well-known song. But I found some interesting background on it. Let's dive right into it. The lyrics were written by lead guitarist and singer Bernard Sumner, by the way, who admitted to being under the influence of LSD while making the song, along with the rest of the band. So there's that.
Good start. This is a good start. Okay. I'm all ears.
If you have been trying to figure out the lyrics... Yeah. Anyway, this is the best-selling 12-inch single of all time in Britain, a fact pointed out in the great mockumentary which we discussed called 24-Hour Party People. Mm-hmm. It's warmly recommended, this one. Look it up if you can. It is also one of the longest charting singles ever, at 7 minutes and 25 seconds. And the single was never issued as a traditional 7-inch until 1988, which is almost 3 years later, which helped boost sales of the 12-inch, of course. Now, New Order came up with this track and the rhythm when they were experimenting with a new Oberheim DMX drum machine that they had purchased. Bernard Sumner and Stephen Morris were the instigators. It was their enthusiasm for new technology, and the drum pattern that they programmed was ripped off from a Donna Summer B-side. So, as they say, we'd finished the drum pattern and we were really happy, and then Steve accidentally kicked out the drum machine lead, so we had to start from scratch, and it was never again as good. The technology was forever breaking down and the studio was really archaic. In fact, Kraftwerk booked it after us because they wanted to emulate Blue Monday. And then they gave up after 4 or 5 days. It was just such a mess. Anyway, the song was a collection of sound bites. It sort of grew and grew. When we got to the end, I went in and jammed the bass. That's what the hooky says. I stole a riff from Ennio Morricone, which I played. Renard then went in and jammed the vocals. And no, they're not about Ian Curse. We wanted it to be vague. We were all miserable. So I thought, why not Blue Monday? Oh, it's a quite apt title. In fact, the title is not mentioned in the lyrics, which is true of many New Order songs. And Bernard actually took the song's name from an illustration in a book by Kurt Vonnegut, a science fiction writer, which I really warmly recommend, by the way. And the book was one that Stephen Morris was reading at the time. One of the illustrations in the book reads, "Goodbye Blue Monday." And it is actually a reference to the invention of the washing machine, improving housewives' lives. So Monday used to be wash day, it's a lot of work, and then the washing machine came. Goodbye, Blue Monday.
No way.
Yeah.
I would never have known this. Okay, cool.
That's what you get, all right? If you have a book laying around, you've all done LSD, and you're just associating freely. Yeah. That's what it's... Actually, keyboardist Gillian Gilbert also told in an interview how the song was made possible in part by flatulence.
Oh.
You,
yeah,
I'll get to that point. Basically, she said the synthesizer melody is slightly out of sync with the rhythm. And this was an accident as well. It was my job to program the entire song from the beginning to the end, which had to be done manually by inputting every note. So I had the sequence all written down on loads of A4 paper, cellotaped together to the length of the recording studio like a huge knitting pattern. But I accidentally left a note out, which skewed the melody.
Really?
So we bought ourselves an emulator one, an early sampler, and we used it to add snatches of choir-like voices and all kinds of other sounds. The voices, by the way, were sampled from Kraftwerk's album Radioactivity, which we also played on the show.
Yeah,
as well as recordings of Thunder. But really, we were only really good with this piece of kit because Bernard and Stephen has worked out how to use the sampler by spending hours recording their own farts. So that's how they learned to manage the machines, right?
Yeah,
okay. So the sleeve for the single is also very iconic. It does not display either the group name or the song title anywhere in plain English.
Mm-hmm.
Instead, The Legend, FAC 73, Factory Record 73, Blue Monday and the Beach New Order, is only represented in code by a series of colored blocks. You could only decipher this with a key, and you had to find a key printed on the back sleeve of the album Power, Corruption and Lies. So, not a very commercial way to present your absolute top song, right?
Most definitely not. But they did have that floppy disk sleeve, right?
Exactly, that's the one, that's the one.
Yeah, okay, that's the one. Yeah.
The blocks on the side are actually code.
Oh, they're color blocks on the side, I didn't know.
If you translate those using the key, which you can find on a totally different album, then you would know what it actually said or what the song was called.
Ah, gotcha. I like this, bit of mystery, bit of effort.
Yeah, so you don't mention the title in the song, mm-hmm. and then you also don't write it down anywhere legibly on the album sleeve, right? Just to make stuff easy for your fans. Anyway, so Peter Hook, a famous bass player of the band, said, "I go through stages of intense dislike for Blue Monday, which I'm sure every group does when they get one song that they're synonymous with. But the way this song keeps getting reinvented is wonderful. It seems to be one of those tracks that's timeless, which is amazing. We were using technology which could have dated like all the other 80s stuff has dated, but somehow we managed to swerve it. Was that deliberate? No, everything we do is by accident. The fact that for 2 years nobody spotted that the sleeves cost more to make than the actual record only confirms that we didn't know what we were doing."
Sounds like a factory story. Artistic freedom.
Exactly what that sleeve looked like. I put it up on the website.
Cool.
So in the end, Blue Monday is not a song, it's a feeling. But once people hear that drum riff, they're just off. People used to go mad when we didn't play it. We had a fight on stage with the DJ in Nottingham once because we didn't want to play it, which was a very New Order thing to do at the time. But then again, as you get older and mellower, you appreciate what you got and where you are. So now we play it because people just love it. This is one of the most influential electronic songs. Synth pop was already a major force in British popular music, but this was arguably the first British dance record to cross over to New York club scene, a very important record for many DJs, still a staple of their set. This is Blue Monday. We'll be right back.
Man, I didn't know they used so many like samples of the Donna Summer beat, some sampling, some drum computers. It is nice to hear this background.
Right, so if you play a popular song, I think you should at least have a good story to go along with it and some stuff that not everybody's aware of.
Yeah, true. And also a perfect fit with the Walkman.
Yeah.
This was a really nice mix.
So there's a good story to that as well, thank you. When the Walk first was released, actually, many people thought that The Cure had ripped off the sound of New Order's mega hit Blue Monday. Mm-hmm. Many fingers were pointed at The Cure. However, no legal action was ever taken because, as it turns out, The Walk was actually written and recorded before, but released after Blue Monday.
Hmm.
The likeness between the two is just proven to be a coincidence, as both bands were experimenting with electronic instruments, sequencers and drum machines, leading them to arrive at similar sounds around the same time frame. Great minds think alike.
I guess they do, man. I hear that drum beat, that those kick drums or bass drums, like really short after each other.
Yeah, yeah.
And also a lot of other stuff that that's quite similar. But
that's very, very sharp. And you're completely right, because The Cure actually used an Oberheim OB-8 synthesizer.
Mm-hmm.
And the exact same Oberheim DMX drum machine that New Order had bought. They just bought the same stuff at the same time and went to the studio and recorded those tracks. So you just hear the same samples, the same machines, and you know the different interpretations of the bands obviously taking this bass in different directions, but the familiarity is absolutely there. They were relatively new devices, and at the time no one quite knew how to use them. With The Walk, which you didn't hear, and I'll play it for you now, if you listen to the intro of The Walk, just the first couple of sounds, you will hear that there is a sort of a thump drum beat which seems to be out of place and some dissonant tone before the song actually starts. Right? Did you hear that?
True, yeah.
Cool. You know why that's there?
I do not. Is it by accident or what is it?
At the beginning of the song, this synth note over a drum beat,
yeah.
They didn't want to have it there, but they didn't really understand the piece of kit that they were using, so they couldn't get rid of it.
Oh, really?
Which is why the song starts in this discordant fashion. Yeah.
Let me listen to it again. Yeah, it's like a, yeah.
It's just an honest studio mistake. It's like, get that thing out of there. I don't know how we did it. I don't know where it is.
I don't know this track any other way, but that's definitely interesting.
Yeah.
What? Yeah.
Funny, no?
So there was just a sequencer and one note or one kind of thing they couldn't get out.
They freely admitted that they just messed up here and didn't know how to take it out of the track anymore. So they kept it in.
Yeah, just don't talk about it. People won't notice and like the track, I guess, in the end.
So, by the way, did you know that Joy Division actually opened for The Cure once at the Marquee Club in London?
No, then I didn't know that. No.
March the 4th, 1979. So almost when you entered the world.
Yeah.
At the Marquee Club in London. You could have gone there. Maybe you were a bit too young to be admitted, but you know, it was definitely affordable.
Yeah, my mom could have taken me,
yeah.
Basically.
So the tickets for The Cure, supported by Joy Division, were £1 each.
A quid.
Entry for the show. Double booking.
Good deal.
So for those interested, an audio recording is available of the exact same Cure show that was recorded only 1 week later. And I'll embed it in the show notes for this episode on www.theinfected.nl, so you can listen to that show completely by a very, very young Cure from the exact same series of concerts.
Cool, cool.
Joy Division would actually support The Cure again 3 months later at the Odeon in Canterbury. And those were the only two times that the bands ever played together.
Hmm.
So a little more about the origin of The Walk. The Cure had gotten into a fight, and they lost their bass player Simon Gallup, and the band was basically in shambles when the remaining two members, Robert Smith and Lol Tolhurst, got together in the studio with their new DMX to compose this song, late 1982. Tolhurst came up with the keyboard riff, and Smith then just took it from there. The song became their biggest ever UK hit at that point, going to number 12 and really revitalizing the band, which had all but broken down. And it was the first Cure song to ever enter the UK top 20. And then it put a lot of pressure on the band for more commercial success. In an interview a year later in 1983, Robert Smith said, "There was just so much pressure after The Walk because it went in the charts and then everybody wanted another single and we had to resist the temptation. I don't want to be bound to the same group of people forever or to the same music forever." And I guess it figures, right? So the original master tapes, by the way, of this track were lost. And the band had to re-record it for their 1990 remix album, Mixed Up.
Yeah, I know that one.
Because they couldn't find them anymore.
There's one good track on that whole album, and that's this one.
Yeah.
The Walk.
Yeah.
The remix version.
Right. two bands at a moment in time with very comparable instruments, taking it in two different directions, but coming up with two, as far as I'm concerned, great tracks. And I hope it's not considered sacrilege that I blended the two together, but I think you can really hear how much they are alike in certain ways. Just fun to make you hear that in this way.
Most definitely. And if this is sacrilege, then you must be going to hell with the mega mix. But I'm going to not talk about that.
Yeah,
no, keep it a secret until the end, right?
No, if I can choose, I'll definitely go to hell together with all the rest of the cool crowd.
Infect me.
Are you ready for some early 90s goth rock? Shall we play a track again?
It's about time for some guitars, man. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, let's go.
Okay, let's do Rosetta Stone with the song Subterfuge from 93. Here we go. that started off quite powerful went into more commercial territory. It's definitely not a band that I frequently play, but they have earned their spot in this goth rock genre that we love. That was nice and energetic.
I think we played Rosetta Stone once before on the show.
Have we?
I'm almost sure.
I think we talked about it, but I don't think we played a track by them. But that may be a long time ago.
We're going to take a look in our the Infected Selected playlist and see if we can surface this band or another track by them. But yeah, classic 90s goth stuff, real 90s production as well.
Yep.
Sounded good. Funky thing happening in the breakdown with the guitar sound, a sort of echo, which makes it swoop by, which I thought was cool and an interesting find there.
Yeah.
But yeah. Agree, nice tune.
Agree.
The Rosetta Stone is famous because it's an Egyptian stone that was had a text from one of the pharaohs, but it was inscribed in three different languages. So there's ancient Greek, and there's hieroglyphs, and there's another script with the same text. So it was very, very helpful for scholars because with this stone, they learned to decipher those ancient hieroglyphs because they had a translation immediately on the stone. So that's why it was... very important, and that it taught them a lot about culture, because it was sort of a key for unlocking much more details of earlier finds.
And also made me think about the recent UFO reports that we've been getting from the US government. They are reporting all these sightings recently from flight carriers and everything. Have you seen that on the news?
Yeah, I heard something about it. There was this guy also, a pretty high up official, who actually admitted to the fact that they had all these sightings recorded and classified as well, right?
Yeah. Yeah, it just made me think of this, like old cave drawings or a Rosetta Stone. I've never seen that one, but let me just stop with this sidestep and talk about this band. Because for the people that didn't know them, they were an English goth rock band formed somewhere in the 80s by a guy called Pearl King and also Carl North. And they had a trusty drum machine and synthesizer rack that they nicknamed Madam Razor. So it's two guys, drum machine, synthesizer. Here we go. Probably some guitars in there.
Sounds like a good recipe.
Sounds like a good recipe. These guys, they wanted to escape the traditional Britpop scene that was going on at the time in their hometown of Liverpool. Soon they met with Wayne Hussey from the well-established band
The Mission
at that time. Yep, yep, you know them.
Yeah.
Wayne was such a nice guy to offer to produce their first album. Quite a nice stepstone.
Mm.
And several singles were put out through the 90s.
Yeah.
And Rosetta Stone issued their full-length album, the first one, Adrenaline, in 93. That's also where this track was on. We just played Subterfuge. And it was also during this time that Rosetta Stone helped lead the quite overlooked goth rock movement into the mainstream together with the Sisters of Mercy. And you can clearly hear that they listened to the Sisters of Mercy quite well. In fact, it's almost a copy, but a more cheesy copy with less catchy hooks anyway. The band later moved to a more electronic sound. They broke up in the year 2000, but resurfaced in the late 2010s with a pair of LPs. I haven't heard them, but I did notice, much more interesting, I think, that Pearl King is the man also behind In Death It Ends. That's a one-man, purely electronic project, and he's self-released a lot of stuff, also in some of my playlists, but I didn't make the connection to Rosetta Stone, Pearl King, In Death It Ends. Really nice stuff. It's very dark and all electronic bangers that he's doing these days as a solo project, so check that out if you have the chance.
Yeah.
The Infected.
I've selected a track that's a bit more moody, a bit more laid back, so let's enjoy it. It's called Ain't It a Shame from 1986 by the B-52s.
Thank you.
Oh man, I have such a soft spot for the B-52s.
Oh brother, me too, man. Don't you just love this? I can play it like 10 times back to back and still doesn't get old. And I also like the Rock Lobster, you know, those hits, or Love Shack, but this is so nice.
Yeah. I used to have a crush on Kate Pearson.
Ooh, okay. Is that the one with red hair or the darker hair?
Kate Pearson, yeah, the singer with the red hair.
Oh yeah.
That's Kate Pearson.
Yeah. I have a soft spot for redheads as well. Don't tell my wife.
All of them actually are in somewhere in the LGBTQ spectrum, so I never would have stood a chance. But, you know, I love them all the same.
Yeah.
And Kate just a little bit more than the rest of them.
Jeroen, you picked The Cure. You picked New Order for this week, along with some other stuff. But it's time to go out with a bang and play some big bands of the genre that we love. And B-52s are definitely up there.
Yeah.
Yeah, just selected this one. It may not be moody or dark, but still very nice. And B-52s, they are also a band that brought a lot of fun and madness to the quite serious new wave movement at the time.
Yeah, much needed humor. Yeah.
Yes, much needed lightness. And they formed in Athens, Georgia in 1976, so that's quite early.
Hey, just like Vision Video. They're also from Athens, Georgia, remember?
Oh, that's true.
Yeah.
Dusty. Yeah.
Something in the water over there.
I guess so, man. I guess so. The funny thing is that you would expect a nice story when how did these people meet? Well, several band members met in a Chinese restaurant and they got wasted. Totally wasted.
Okay.
And then they hit it off. The next day, they did a jam session together and the rest is history. Sure, sounds like a good story.
Yeah.
And the most recognizable band members are Fred Schneider with his quirky vocals, and the male vocals that you will hear in most of the tracks.
Yeah.
Together with then Cindy Wilson and Kate Pearson. You just mentioned one of them. That was Kate, right?
Yeah, Kate, yeah.
And Cindy and Kate, they featured the famous cylinder-shaped 60s hairdo, of course.
Yeah.
In fact, the name the B-52s come from the similarity between that hairdo and the nose of a B-52 bomber airplane.
Yeah.
Cone shape. You got it?
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. It's also the B for beehive. Yeah. It's all out there.
Oh, okay. Yeah, beehive. Okay, I didn't find that one, but that's a nice addition. So this is a more introspective song, like we just mentioned. It's from their fourth studio album called Bouncing Off the Satellites. And the guitarist is quite of a sad story as well attached to this record, because Ricky Wilson tragically died of AIDS after the album was completed and prior to its release as well. He had kept his illness a secret from his bandmates.
Mm.
And I just listened to the track. You know, I'm not a big listener of lyrics, but I just heard Ain't It a Shame, We Miss You. And that kind of made me think, or made me feel, that this track maybe was added later as a kind of an homage to Ricky Wilson, I don't know. Bouncing Off the Satellites is a very nice and also slower album that also had some beautiful ballads on it and sounds quite sad as a whole. Not that jumpy fun stuff, but it's more of a serious one. Anyway, I love it, as you can read between the lines, dear listener. Hope you enjoyed it.
Yeah, no, definitely. Always enjoy. Love B-52s.
Perfect, man.
Okay, but it's a bit too mellow to finish off this show, right? So it's time to rock out. One more time, I want to pick up a story of a guy who is not all that well known and is really special. And also, one last contribution in the Cover Me section.
Cover Me!
In our Cover Me section, it's time to feature a really nice goth cover of a classic DM track. This was released by Odyssey, which is a side project formed in 1999 by Swedish multi-instrumentalist Dan Swanö. Now, Dan is a special guy. He's played in and recorded with an unbelievable number of goth and death metal bands. His Wikipedia page lists more than 100 different bands that he has contributed to, and notes that even over 100 bands, the list is not complete. So his contributions include audio production, engineering, mastering and mixing, as well as playing guitar, bass, drums, keyboards and singing in various styles, from grunts and growls to clean, high-pitched and goth vocals. In the late 90s, this multi-talented guy, Dan, started his own studio called Unisound, or Gory Sound Studio, now located in Örebro, near his home in Sweden. And still, while he was doing all of this, Dan up until recently also worked full-time at Musikbörsen, yes, a music store, in Örebro. No wonder then that he rarely performs live with any of his bands. This man is just too busy. Now, this Odyssey track comes from a real side project that he did by himself almost completely. At first, he recorded an EP called Odyssey, which contained 3 songs and a total playing time of 19 minutes. So you can imagine they're pretty complex and progressive. The music was supposed to sound like a heavier Dream Theater, to give you an idea. And after recording it, then let the project basically rest for 10 years and then finally revived it in 2009. When he decided to record 7 of his all-time favorite songs which inspired him by other bands. He was singing and playing all instruments himself.
Okay.
Together with the 3 1999 tracks, these were released in 2010 as one full album called Reinventing the Past. Now that album contains our cover for today. Let's listen to Dan the Man, also known as Odyssey. Odyssey, what did you think, Grof?
I liked it. I definitely hear that metal background. It starts off right away with some nice melodic guitars and very well put together. At first I thought, well, maybe sounding a little bit commercial, but it's really nice on the ears and it has a really high replay value. I never heard of this guy, and you mentioned he's been working with 100 or more other artists. It's quite impressive.
Yeah, and it's a very broad range of styles as well that this guy plays and has played, and also bands that he's recorded. So he has an interesting life, I'm sure, when he's not in the record store recommending music to people. But yeah. So also I wanted to play this song because I really love this song by Depeche Mode. The original song, of course, is called Shake the Disease. Mm-hmm. It's from Depeche Mode's UK single, which was never actually put on one of their studio albums. It's their 13th single, which was released in April 1985. One of my personal favorites. And I thought it would be a fitting finish to The Infected with this song as a message to all our listeners. The past 1.5 years we've been not easy for anybody. They've been hard, they've been grim, and they've been filled with fear. And due to the infection, Corona, we've been locked up and our favorite bands haven't been able to play. Now we hope you're all well and got through this thing safely. And now that vaccinations are being distributed, the world reopens and summer has returned, let's hope we can all move on and shake the disease.
8-bit minute.
For the spectacular ending to this great show, we have some winners and goodies to reward you. First, the solution to last week's last 8-bit minute. That was indeed How Soon Is Now by The Smiths. And many of you got that right. So well done to you all. So, without further ado, let's announce the winners of our 8-bit minute competition.
Yep.
That's a drum roll for you. Okay, so Jessica from Fort Smith in the United States, you are our number one in more ways than one. Not only were you the only listener to send in the correct solution to each and every episode of the 8-Bit Minute, never missing a beat, literally, you've also showered us with messages and shares of your social posts, and you've been great as a supporter, and you have been a flawless 8-Bit Minute participant.
Well deserved, Jessica. Enjoy.
A The Infected t-shirt awaits you if you will kindly just reach out once more and let us know your preferred t-shirt size. Congratulations. Well done. Thank you. Jessica, you rock. And then, as we promised, more winners. We decided to have not one, but actually two runners-up. Joppe, by the way, he was the guy who suggested Arab Strap, so we have him to thank for that great track at the beginning of the show as well. And also Seb, you have both sent in a series of correct solutions. And to beat, you have also suggested many great bands and tracks, several of which have made it to the shortlist, and some of them even to the show.
Yep.
Thank you for your engagement and for your support. Just send in your address details and we will send you both a Black Magic mug by The Infected. So, congratulations to all our winners, and thank you to everyone who played along. We had fun doing this with you.
Yeah, guys.
And
it's been fun.
Yeah, thanks a lot. In fact, you're all winners. A prize awaits for anyone who sends us a message. We have been working on a The Infected Mega Mix with all the tracks we've ever played on the show. Yes, in all three seasons of this show.
Yes.
And we mix them seamlessly into one giant set. This means a special mix with well over 200 tracks. So that is over 15 hours of dark music for your non-stop listening pleasure. Want access to this mix? Because we appreciate you coming along with us on our wild ride at The Infected, you can. Just let us know via Instagram, via the contact form at theinfected.nl, or email us at theinfectednl@gmail.com, and we will send you the link. Eventually, we're going to try to send out the entire mix as a special episode, maybe, but I'm having serious doubts whether the podcast platforms will accept a file that is well over 2 gigabytes. So no promises there. Yeah,
I kind of know the answer, bro.
Yeah,
it's going to be a stretch.
I'm going to try and stuff it in there anyway. But if you don't hear anything from us after this, that didn't work out. So if you still want to have access to the file and hear it, let us know, right?
Just a short note and we'll gladly send over. Yeah,
a link. So we'll put it somewhere where they'll let us. And then, now that it's over, what options do you have left? At our website, theinfected.nl, you can check out the stories about all of the tracks. Pictures to go along with them, links to video clips of the tracks we've played, and you can read exclusive interviews, for instance by Vision Video, Then Comes Silence, NNHMN, and Os Animo. Or you can find mixed sets by great DJs like DJ Boulay and Max Weemoed. And if you want to pick up some merchandise, you can still use the code INFECTME for free shipping worldwide. Thank you, children of the night. Thank you for your attention, for your follows, your love, your likes, your messages, and your support on this journey. So, on to the last track, and we think it's a fitting end to this final episode. Thank you for your help to spread the infection that is the love of music. You, us, artists, podcasters, listeners, we're all in this thing together. We all are the infected. Stay strange.
Reality is overrated. We patrol Edge City and beyond.
Children of the night, it doesn't look like there's any more episodes of The Infected coming, but if you are also interested in alternative music and beats, we do recommend the Edge City Radio podcast. In this radio show, made from the edge of reality, you will find alternative beats with a bite. Look us up at edgecityradio.com. I would love to play you some beats with an edge. Look us up at edgecityradio.com. I would love to play you some beats with an edge.